Okay, good morning everybody, and thank you for coming to learn with me this morning. This morning what we're going to discuss, first of all, a great Yasher Koach to Rav Wieder Shlita for just an absolutely magnificent presentation on Birchas HaGomel and the sense of Hoda'a, and especially for the Divrei Hashkafa at the end as well. But today what I would like to talk about a little bit is the attitude and the teachings of Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, relating to Hakaras HaTov, relating to a sense of gratitude. You know, we are still reeling from the loss of one of the great thinkers of our time, and really the greatest spokesperson for Torah values to the rest of the world. You know, we talk about the concept of Or LaGoyim, of being a light unto the nations, of representing the beauty of Torah values to the rest of the world, but few of us are able to actualize it, and none of us are able to do so as expertly as Rav Lord Jonathan Sacks Zatzal was able to. And today is a day of Thanksgiving. Even though it's a secular legal holiday, it is always a good idea to use that as an impetus to think about what in fact we are grateful for. I'm reminded my ninth grade Rebbe told us, Rabbi Beryl Leiner, who is a Talmud of Rav Pam Zichrono Levracha, told us that Rav Pam came into yeshiva, to Torah Vidas, on January 1st, and he would ask all the boys, what's your New Year's resolution? He would go around the room asking the Talmidim, what's your New Year's resolution? And the Talmidim said, Rebbe, New Year's? I mean, this is not a Jewish thing. And Rav Pam said that halavai, we should have a New Year's resolution, meaning it may be that New Year's is not a Jewish holiday, but we should always be trying to make improvements in our lives. And if we're able to come up with a resolution and a way to improve ourselves, then all the more so, that's a good reason to use whatever impetus you can to make improvements. And certainly it's helpful to have a day of Thanksgiving to think about that which we have Hakaras HaTov for. And we are all grateful for Rabbi Sacks' teachings, and he himself used this day as a springboard to express both his personal gratitude for the good things in his life and for sharing insightful teachings about gratitude. One of the methods that Rabbi Sacks utilized in making Judaism not only palatable but attractive to the rest of the world was to emphasize those elements of Judaism that represent a universal ethic: humility, passion, honesty, family, love. You read through his writings, and these are the things that he would speak about. Peace, you know, things that all humanity can and should relate to. And one such example is Rabbi Sacks' many teachings relating to the importance of Hakaras HaTov, relating to the importance of gratitude. By taking a concept that everybody has heard of, and instead of just saying the same old things about that concept, that it's good to be humble, it's good to be passionate about important things, it's good to be honest, it's good to be ethical, he would uncover layers of depth and meaning within each of these categories, within each of these midos, that made it exciting, that there was something new to learn about just how much the Torah has to say about these concepts. And certainly his teachings of Hakaras HaTov reflect this idea, that he would not only teach about the basics of Hakaras HaTov, but uncover a certain higher ethic that the Torah teaches about Hakaras HaTov beyond what is universally recognized typically by most people. I'm reminded of the story of we once had on a DRS Shabbaton years ago, a Baal Tshuva who worked in the movie industry when in his earlier years, and he was telling his story, and one of the boys asked him, what was your impetus to want to become religious? Why did you decide that you know, you were living this life as a Hollywood writer, and you know, which was a very different life than a typical religious Jew? What made you want to become religious? And he said that it was when he was in law school. He said he happened to have gone to Cordoza Law School, to Yeshiva University's law school. So he said when he was in law school, he was learning one day in one of his classes about the Good Samaritan law, and the idea basically being, I'm not a lawyer, I don't know much about this, but the basic idea being that if you see someone in distress and you honestly try your best to help the person, you can't be punished if things go sideways, if it doesn't go the way, if you inadvertently cause harm to the person, because we want to encourage people to want to help other people. So there's this Good Samaritan law, and he thought to himself as he was sitting in that class, What an amazing country we live in, that we have laws on the books that are there to encourage people to help each other, to be mechazik, a friend in distress or a stranger in distress. What an amazing ethical, moral country we live in. And he said he happened to have been taking that semester a Jewish law class with Rabbi J. David Bleich as well. And the next day, in Rabbi Bleich's Jewish law class, Rabbi Bleich was teaching about the Isra of Lo Samur al Dam Re'echa, that if you see someone in distress, you cannot ignore them. You have to help them. Meaning you don't even have the option of driving right past them and letting them just stay there in distress. And he said, it struck me at that moment. Not too many Balei Tshuva have this story, right? It wasn't a Shabbos, it wasn't a visit to Eretz Yisrael. It struck me at that moment, he said, that just yesterday, 24 hours earlier, I thought I had heard the most moral and ethical teaching I had ever heard in my life. And I was so grateful to be in a country that preaches such morality and that encourages such morality. And now I learned of a morality that dwarfs the morality I learned about yesterday. That not only should you, not only do we want to encourage you, but lo samul al dam reyecha, you must, if you see someone in distress, we have this social contract that we have to help other people. And he said that's what turned him on. And I always thought of that story as an amazing example of how sometimes we have universal ethics. There are universal things that we all believe and that all of humanity ought to believe, but the Torah sometimes has what to say about these things, about these ideas and these ethics that are far beyond what anyone would normally associate with these ethics. And that level, I'd like to discuss, explore a little bit, some of Rabbi Sacks's thought relating to Hakaras HaTov. And we're not just going to present Rabbi Sacks's ideas, but we're going to try to expand on them as well, while obviously recognizing that neither I nor most others could ever present Rabbi Sacks's ideas with the elegance and the force that he would have done so. But this is Jewish tradition, to take the teachings of rabbinic leaders and expand on them, critique them, question them, try to understand them more deeply, and ultimately appreciate them on a deeper level. So when looking at all of his teachings on the topic of Hakaras HaTov, and I can't say that I found all of them, but a quick Google search, and you can find a lot of Rabbi Sacks's teachings on Hakaras HaTov, what emerges, or at least to me, is even though he never formulated it this way, is that he had a three-pronged appreciation of this midah. Most of us rightfully see Hakaras HaTov as an obligation bein adam lechavero, that someone does good for you, so we are supposed to acknowledge that good with a sense of gratitude, to say thank you. That's a basic bein adam lechavero, the way people interact with each other. Rabbi Sacks, Zichrono Livracha, saw it on three different levels. There's bein adam lechavero, bein adam la'atzmo, and bein adam la'makom. That just as, in general, there are three categories of mitzvos, often people think of it as two categories, bein adam la'chavero, bein adam la'makom, that which is between man and his fellow, and that which is between man and his God, but the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary on Mishlei, pointed out that there's also a third category called bein adam la'atzmo. Bein adam la'atzmo means to just become a better person, to be more like God, mahu afata, that we're supposed to emulate the midos of Hashem, to develop as a bal midos, even if we're alone on a desert island somewhere and there's no one around us to express those positive midos too, it's still inherently valuable to be a person who has positive midos. Let's say there's not going to be a victim of my anger, for example, but I'm just a person who gets angry very easily, and I'm living on a desert island all by myself, my ship capsized, and I'm figuring out life all by myself. If I get angry and I start throwing things and breaking things and screaming and yelling and cursing, that's a violation. Not bin adam lamakom, not bin adam lachavero, but bin adam laatzmo. What kind of person are we? And Rabbi Sacks saw in Hakaras HaTov all three elements: bin adam lachavero, bin adam lamakom, and bin adam laatzmo. Let's begin with the most obvious, with bin adam lachavero. It's obvious, of course, Hakaras HaTov is bin adam lachavero, but Rabbi Sacks revealed a much deeper enhancement of interpersonal relationships than simply treating others nicely. From the bin adam lachavero perspective, he didn't just see it as something that we do for others, but as a way to ensure globally that others enhance their behavior toward us and toward other people. In a drasha called To Thank Before We Think, Yisro 5776, Taf Shin Ayin Vav, Rabbi Sacks spoke about the Aseres HaDibros. Parshas Yisro, of course, he spoke about the Aseres HaDibros. And we often think of the Aseres HaDibros as two sets of five. The first five that are Ben Adam Lamakom, and the next five that are Ben Adam L'Chavera, with, of course, the bridge being Kibbur HaVeEim, which is a bridge between Ben Adam Lamakom, Ben Adam L'Chavera, and that's based on the suffix the Minchas Chinuch raises in Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, whether, in fact, Kibbur HaVeEim is a Mitzvah Ben Adam L'Chavera, or is a mitzvah Ben Adam L'Makom. The Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that if one honors his parents, HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers it Ki'ilu Kibduni, as if you've honored me. Shlosh HaShutfin Yesh Ba'Adam, there are three partners in making man, Aviv, Imo, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there is an element of Ben Adam L'Makom and Kibbur HaVeEim, but we normally think of the Aseres HaDibros in this way. Rabbi Sacks doesn't point this out, but there's a reason we normally think of it in this way in the two sets of five. The Gaonim say that. The Gaonim say that we ought to think of it as two sets of five. But thinking a little bit outside the box, Rabbi Sacks says maybe it's not two sets of five, maybe it's three sets of three with a cherry on top. Maybe it's three sets of three, and then one last one that brings it all together. Wow, now we have to look. How does it break down into three sets of three? The first three, the belief in one God, the belief that there is no other God, and not taking God's name in vain, are all about Hashem. The next three, keeping Shabbos, honoring our parents, and not murdering, are all about createdness. After all, the creation of the world was completed on Shabbos, and that's what Shabbos celebrates. Our parents brought us into the world. That's createdness. And murder is forbidden because we were all created in Hashem's image. The third set of three, not to commit adultery, not to steal, not to bear false witness, are all about the institutions of a properly functioning society. Marriage, property, justice. Those are necessary components for a properly functioning society. And it's all brought together by the 10th commandment, Lo Sachmod, Lo Sis Aveh, that a person should not be covetous, he should not desire that which does not belong to him, which anyway is neither an action, nor a thought, nor a belief. It's an emotion which seemingly cannot be legislated at all. It's difficult to understand why that even belongs on the list of Aseres HaDibros, let alone the item that brings all of the Aseres HaDibros together. Lo Sachmod. So I would have suggested, had I not read Rabbi Sacks' piece, I would have suggested that it highlights just how much we are in control of our emotions. The Chinuch asks the question and doesn't he ask the question, how can God command Lo Sachmod? It's just something that you either have or you don't, you feel or you don't feel. How could there be a mitzvah of Lo Sachmod? And unlike the Ibn Ezra, who gives a mashal about how we're supposed to view other people's property, he gives a mashal of a peasant and a princess, that the peasant doesn't think that he desires the princess because he knows that she's so far out of his league, it's not even possible. The Chinuch doesn't discuss that. The Chinuch just says, of course you can control what you desire. Yes, human beings can control almost anything about their lives. We can't control what happens to us, but our attitude toward what happens to us, our attitude toward those around us, of course we're in absolute control. But Rabbi Sacks gives that a little more color. He points out that perhaps the point is, and here's the key line, there's always one key line in every drush of Rabbi Sacks, you know, one that you could highlight, that you can underline, and that you can always take with you. And here it is. What we believe affects what we feel. In Achinami, Lo Sachmod is a feeling. It's an emotion. But what we believe affects what we feel. See, when one feels envy, envy drives violence. It's what led Cain to kill Hevel. It's what caused both Avram and Yitzchak to fear for their lives when famine forced them to leave their home. And they were worried about what? About envy, that people are going to be envious, that they have these beautiful wives and some of the king is going to want to take them. Envy is what is what caused the brothers' hatred of Yosef. Just last week we were talking about rabbinic placement and we came across a shul called Brothers of Joseph. So one of the Rabbanim in the meeting said, I'd be afraid of a shul called Brothers of Joseph. You know, that relationship didn't work out well. So I immediately Googled it. Why in the world did they name a shul Brothers of Joseph? So it turned out in like 1886, they had a, people were bidding. They had an auction for the highest bidder gets to name the shul. And the guy who won the auction had a son named Joseph that week. So he called the shul Brothers of Joseph. So, okay, anyway. But normally we don't think of Brothers of Joseph as a relationship that, you know, that worked out particularly well. And that was caused by envy, that Yosef got this ksonas pasim. Yosef got Yaakov's love and attention and time, and they didn't get all of that. So it was all caused by envy. And also, it's what causes all anti-Semitism in the world. The Gemara tells us that Sinai is so called because Misham Yarda Sina Liolam, that anti-Semitism comes about because Hashem chose us, we're the Amanivchar, and we received the Torah, we received God's autobiography to live our life by. So envy is the most basic force undermining social harmony and order that are the aim of the Aseres HaDibros as a whole. The purpose of Aseres HaDibros is to ensure that there's social harmony and order, and envy undermines all of that. The antidote to envy is gratitude. Who is rich, asks Ben Zoma, and Ben Zoma replies, one who rejoices in what he has. Hasameach bechelko. We wake up each morning and we thank before we think, says Rabbi Sacks. We say, Moda ani. Judaism, as Rabbi Sacks in Rabbi Sacks' words, is gratitude with attitude. Cured of letting other people's happiness diminish our own, we release this wave of positive energy that allows us to celebrate what we have instead of thinking about what other people have, and to be what we are instead of wanting to be what we are not. So, Ben Adam L'Chavero, yes, but not just because it's nice to say thank you, and it makes others feel good if you say thank you. It is the greatest guarantor for the proper functioning of all of society. Is there a greater Ben Adam L'Chavero than to promote peace, to promote justice, to promote a sense of society functioning in an ideal way? That's why gratitude is so important. Because when there is gratitude, there's no room for lo sachmod. When one is grateful for what they do have, then there's not going to be any room for jealousy. And that jealousy, that sense of wanting what others have, is what undermines everything within society. It's this broader Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Then Rabbi Sacks discusses in a different drasha how it's also a mitzvah Ben Adam L'Atzmo. In a drasha, Parshas Ekev, Tafshin Ayin Hey, entitled The Power of Gratitude, Rabbi Sacks refers to a study that he loved to quote. How do I know he loved to quote it? I did not know Rabbi Sacks personally. I met him twice, maybe. I know he loved to quote it, again, just based on Google. I found it in many of his writings. He would always quote this study. In the early 1990s, one of the great medical research exercises of modern times took place. It became known as the Nun Study. 700 American nuns agreed to allow their records to be accessed by a research team investigating the process of aging and Alzheimer's disease. At the start of the study, the participants were aged between 75 and 102. You see, the reason they were able to do this study is because back in the 1930s, Mother Superior had asked the nuns to write a brief autobiographical account of their life and their reasons for entering the convent. The researchers sought to test whether their emotional state in 1930 had an effect on their health 60 years later. Since they had all lived a very similar lifestyle during the six decades in between, they were an ideal test group because they were nuns for 60 years. They were all living exactly the same way. So how did their attitudes in the 1930s affect them 60 years later? And they were an ideal group for testing this hypothesis of some link between emotional attitudes and physical health. And the results, which were published in 2001, were absolutely startling. The more positive emotion, contentment, gratitude, happiness, love, and hope that the nuns expressed in their autobiographical notes in the 1930s, the more likely they were to be alive and well 60 years later. The difference was as much as 7 years in life expectancy. And that, says Rabbi Sacks, is what Moshe Rabbeinu was highlighting in Devarim Perek Ches Psukim Yud Aleph through Yud Zayin, the importance of gratitude to the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu warns them, looks at a nation that over the last 40 years had more than their share of ingratitude toward the Ribono Shel Olam for all that he had done for them. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hishamar lecha pentishkach es Hashem Elokech levil tishmar mitzvot mishpatav v'chukosav. Be careful, do not forget what Hashem has done for you. Pentochal v'savatu batim tov v'tivna v'yashavta. You're going to build houses and you're going to experience success. V'ram levavcha v'shachachta es Hashem Elokech v'mitziach ha-meretz mitzrayim beis avadim. And you're going to feel a sense of arrogance and you're going to forget all the good that Hashem did for you. That He took you out of a beis avadim. Hamalicha b'midbar ha-gadol v'anora. And that He took you through this imposing desert. Hamalicha man b'midbar. He gave you man in the desert, this heavenly food, Ashala Yadon, Avosecha, that up to that point had never existed, and since then we've never experienced anything quite like it. I'm skipping around in the Psukim, Kochi va'otzim yadi, asali asachayel hazeh. And you're going to think that it's all about you. The most important message that Moshe Rabbeinu, in his parting message to the Jewish people, was to drop the failures in gratitude that so frequently plagued them in the Midbar, and to remember how they went from a battered slave nation to becoming an independent sovereign nation in their promised homeland. And why is that so important? Because if you want to actualize who you can be, come. If you want to be healthy, you want to be good, you want to be someone that other people want to be around, bein adam latzmo. You want to do what's best for you, you'll have this attitude of gratitude. And since the Nun study, the research on gratitude has revealed so much about the power of having an attitude of gratitude. Grateful people are more healthy, more likely to regularly exercise, go for regular medical checkups. Gratitude reduces the most toxic of all emotions. Resentment, frustration, regret, depression, all of these things, all of these emotions, you know, people, let's say someone who has, we mentioned before, a problem with ka'as, a problem with anger, who are they hurting most? The person that they lash out at? No. Who are they hurting most? They're hurting themselves the most, because they're eating themselves up inside. They're eating themselves up. They're not experiencing a sense of menuchas ha-nefesh. A person who has gratitude experiences a sense of menuchas ha-nefesh. Grateful people sleep better. They're less envious of others. They have better relationships with other people. And that's why in Judaism we start each day with the words moda ani. By the way, not ani modeh, which might be more grammatically correct, but moda ani, because we cannot possibly start each day with the word ani. It's never all about ani. It's moda, that we start each day with the word of gratitude. The Eliyahu Rabbah writes that the only part of Chazaras HaShatz, I think Rabbi Weider might have mentioned this, I don't remember, the only part of Chazaras HaShatz that we have to say ourselves is modim, because saying thank you cannot be delegated to somebody else. And it's instructive, Rabbi Sachs pointed out, that Abraham Lincoln's Thanksgiving proclamation was issued on October 3rd, 1863, at the height of the Civil War. Things weren't going well in this country when Abraham Lincoln issued the Thanksgiving proclamation. We were a nation at war with itself. And although the nation was at war with itself, there were still blessings for which both sides could express gratitude. And Lincoln highlighted these things: a fruitful harvest, no foreign invasion, the protection of God, those who received comfort after losing loved ones, those who didn't lose loved ones. There's always what to look for, to feel gratitude. And that's what Lincoln had in mind. And a number of ideas support this notion that gratitude in Judaism is not only about the other, it's not only about how it affects Ben Adam Chaveru, but it's really about oneself. Moshe Rabbeinu expressed gratitude, and Rabbi Sachs does not point this out, but obviously undoubtedly aware of Rashi and Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu expressed gratitude to the water and to the sand. In the first few makos, he couldn't be the one that carries it out. It had to be Aaron HaKohen. Rashi and Chumash tells us, Parshas Ve'era. Why? Because the sand helped him out. The water protected him when he was a baby. So he had to express gratitude. Is the sand going to turn around to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, oh, that's so nice of you. Nice of you to remember. I appreciate that. Of course not. The sand is an inanimate object. The water is inanimate. What do you mean? Express gratitude to sand and to water? The lesson of how far Hakaras HaTov goes had to be taught dafka in Mitzrayim also, because the slavery of Mitzrayim was based on a lack of Hakaras HaTov. How did the slavery happen? Vayaka melech hadash asher lo yada es Yosef. He had a new melech that didn't remember how grateful they should have been to Yosef and how nicely they should treat Yosef's family as a result of that. It all started with a lack of gratitude. And therefore, the most important lessons of gratitude are going to come out of Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's a famous story with Rav Gustman, Zichrono Livracha. Rav Gustman was one of the great Litvisha Gaonim that a lot of Yeshiva Bachram probably never heard of. But Mamisha Gaon Olam, an absolute super genius. Rav Gustman was a dayan in Vilna when he was 21 years old. He was on Reb Chaim Eiser's Beis Din. This is an unusual mind. And Rav Gustman, after the war, he lost his... His son was beaten to death while he was holding him in his arms by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. He had to then barter his son's shoes in order to get some food to feed his daughter. And he lived through absolutely terrible, terrible things during the war. And one of the things that Rav Gustman used to do when he established his yeshiva in Rechavia, which is also fascinating that that's where he chose to establish a yeshiva, in Rechavia. So one of the things that he did was that he planted a garden in front of the yeshiva. And he not only planted the garden, he tended the garden in front of the yeshiva. He was the one that watered it each and every day. And the Talmidim said, you know, Rebbe, we'll hire a gardener. You know, you don't have to be the one to water, or we'll have the Talmidim do it. Why does Rebbe have to be the one? And Rav Gustman explained that before the war, he used to take walks with Rav Chaim Ozer, and they used to walk through the woods, through this forested area. And Rav Chaim Ozer, as they were walking, and they were talking and learning, Rav Gustman said Rav Chaim Ozer would point to different plants and say, that's poisonous, that you can never eat. That could sustain a person and is a great source of iron. And that, and he would just tell them about he would tell Rav Gustman as they were walking about all of these different plants. Rav Gustman said, I had no idea why. I didn't know, like, who cares? Why are you telling me about all these different plants? But he was Reb Chaim Ozer, so I'm not going to question. I'd just like to welcome my mother. I see my mother from Eretz Yisrael is here, so thank you, Ima, for coming. So Reb Chaim Ozer, I had no idea, sort of, Gusman, why Reb Chaim Ozer, coincidentally, my mother's in Rechavia right now, so this fits the story. So Reb Chaim Ozer would tell him all of these things, and he didn't understand why. And he said, and then during the Holocaust, Reb Gustman said, I had to hide out for a year. I had to sustain myself and survive in a forest. And but for those teachings of Rav Chaim Ozer about what I can sustain myself with, what I can live with, and what will kill me, I never would have survived. So I planted all of those plants that sustained me, that kept me alive during the war. And now, out of Hakaras HaTov, I take care of those plants. I water those plants myself. Now, let me ask you, are those plants going to turn around to Rav Gustman? They're going to say, oh, I'm glad you appreciate what we did for you. It's not even the same plants. This is not about Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. This is about Ben Adam L'Atzmo, that a person developing a sense of gratitude in their soul, in who they are, in developing themselves. And that's the idea, that second idea that Rabbi Sacks highlights, that it's not only Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, but it's also Ben Adam L'Atzmo. But I think perhaps most magnificent of all three of Rabbi Sacks' ideas is the third element, Ben Adam L'Makom. Now, on the one hand, gratitude as a Ben Adam L'Makom is obvious. You say thank you to Hashem. So, of course, gratitude is a Ben Adam L'Makom. But Rabbi Sacks saw something so much deeper, and this is in a drasha, Tzav Tavshin Ayin Ches, called Giving Thanks, 5778, a drasha called Giving Thanks. Our first thank you every morning is not to another person, it's to Hashem. The Karban Todah that Rabbi Weider just so beautifully spoke about, and its modern form, which Rabbi Weider questioned whether it's actually a modern form of the Karban Todah, Birchas HaGomel, are a thank you to Hashem. But Rav Sacks sees an even greater level of Ben Adam L'Makom in Hakaras HaTov. It's not just that we're duty-bound to express our thanks, but it's about what the desire to say thank you says about us. This is based on something that he cites elsewhere. He doesn't go through the whole Arichus in this drasha, but I found it elsewhere in Rabbi Sacks' writing. He cites a work by an American sociologist, Peter Berger, a book called A Rumor of Angels, and what Peter Berger calls signals of transcendence. What are signals of transcendence? Phenomena within the human situation that point to something beyond. And among them, he includes humor and hope, Meaning there's nothing in nature that explains our ability to reframe painful situations in such a way that we can laugh at them. All the greatest comedians are from persecuted people, right? The greatest comedians in this country were always Jews and African Americans, right? It's always the most persecuted people. Why does that happen, that the greatest comedians are the most persecuted people? Because there's something about the human condition where we can take the most unfortunate things and we can turn them into humor. Where does that come from? What about biology? Our biology would dictate that we have the ability to do so, that there's a human capacity to find meaning in the depths of suffering. These are not, in the classic sense, proofs of the existence of God, says Rabbi Sacks, but they're experiential evidence. These kinds of things tell us that we're not random collections of selfish genes blindly reproducing themselves. Our bodies may be products of nature, but our minds, our thoughts, our emotions, all that is meant by the word soul, by the word neshama, are not. We are not afar ve'efer. Afar min ha'aretz, afar min ha'adama. That's what our bodies are. And says Rabbi Sacks, if I think about those ideas, those signals of transcendence, those midos that people have, that point to the fact that there is a God, that point to the fact that there must be a Ribono Shel Olam. Again, not a proof in the classical sense, but a signal of transcendence. I'll read you Rabbi Sacks' words. For me, the almost universal instinct to give thanks is one of the signals of transcendence in the human condition. It's not just the pilot we want to thank when we land safely after a hazardous flight. Not just the surgeon when we survive an operation. Not just the judge or politician when we're released from prison or captivity. It is as if some larger force was operative. As if the hand that moves the pieces on the human chessboard were thinking of us. As if heaven itself had reached down and come to our aid. Insurance companies sometimes describe natural catastrophes as acts of God. Human emotion tends to do the opposite. Meaning, not natural catastrophes. God is in the good news. That's the catchphrase for that one. God is in the good news. God is not only in the natural catastrophes. Those are not the only things that are acts of God. God is in the good news, the miraculous deliverance, the escape from catastrophe, and that instinct to offer thanks to a force, a presence over and above natural circumstances and human intervention is itself a signal of transcendence. Though it's not a proof of the existence of God, it is nonetheless an intimation of something deeply spiritual in the human heart. Our bodies may be products of nature. Dust you are, and to dust you will return. But there's something within us that reaches out to someone beyond us. Wow. What Rabbi Sacks is telling us, it's not just that we say thank you to Hashem. The very fact that we want to say thank you is an indication that there is a Hashem. The very fact that we're created in such a way where when something good happens, we feel like we want to say thank you to the Ribono Shel Olam, that's an indication of the presence of a Ribono Shel Olam. And of course, Rabbi Sacks, with his range of Mar Mekomos, refers to something that Rabbi Weider referred to previously. He said, human emotion tends to find God in the good things. And in a footnote, he writes, except for in one memorable episode of The Simpsons, in which Bart Simpson, before beginning his Thanksgiving meal, turns to heaven and says in place of grace, "We paid for all this stuff ourselves, so thanks for nothing." Okay, but with that notable exception, says Rabbi Sacks, that's the range Rabbi Sacks had. With that notable exception, says Rabbi Sacks, we have this inclination to want to thank Hashem, and we certainly appreciate that throughout rabbinic literature, we find the idea of Hakaras HaTov being a method of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, the very first failure in Hakaras HaTov was a failure of Hakaras HaTov to Hashem. When Adam HaRishon was taken to task for violating the sin of the Eitz Hadas, Ha'isha Asher Nasati Imadi. Oh, it's the woman that you gave me that caused me to do this. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're a Kafui Tova. And that's going to be a signal of Kafui Tova down the line in the future. The Gemara in Kiddushin we referenced before, that when we're Mechabed Av Ve'em, Hashem considers it Ki'ilu Kibduni, because it shows that we appreciate those who did good for us. We have to focus our gratitude toward Hashem. I'm reminded of the story that I once heard when I was Menachem Avel, parents who had lost their daughter. It was Menachem Avel years ago, Rabbi Maurice Lamb and Badal Ben Chaim L'Chaim, Rebbetzin Shirley Lamb, she should live and be well in good health, had lost their daughter Judy Young, who was a tremendous tzaddikas. And I went to be Menachem Avel, and they were telling me stories about their daughter. And one of the stories that they shared was that when she was a teenager, when she was 17 years old, she was diagnosed with cancer, and she had a significant battle with cancer at the age of 17. Thank God she recuperated and went on to build a beautiful family that continues to grow and grow. Even after her passing, she still passed away way too young, but she had the opportunity to get married and build a beautiful family. And what Rabbi Lamb told us was that when Judy Young was 17 years old and about to take her last chemo pill, the last pill that she needed, as her treatment was coming to an end, she hesitated. And her parents said, "Judy, what's the matter? Judith, what's the matter? Why don't you take the pill? Are you angry? You're angry at Hashem?" And she said, "No, I'm trying to think how I could properly thank Hashem for the good that He has done for me before I take this last pill. How am I going to, I can't take this without a plan where my Hakaras HaTov is going to go." And she decided, "I am committing myself to bring 25 people closer to Hashem." And then she took the pill. And she paid that back with ribbis, way more than 25 people that she brought closer to Hashem. So Rabbi Sachs highlights these three ideas, that gratitude is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, but not just the regular Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, that we express gratitude to other people, but that it really brings society together and allows society to function. Gratitude is Bein Adam L'Atzmo. It's Bein Adam L'Atzmo in the sense that we become better people, we become healthier people, we become people who are more productive people when we have a sense of gratitude. And gratitude is Bein Adam L'Makom, not only in the sense that we are thankful to Hashem, but that the sense that of gratitude that we have is a raya to the existence of Hashem. And with that, we move on to what Rabbi Sachs himself was most thankful for. He himself expressed it openly, publicly, many times, the things that he was thankful for. He often told the story how when he and his wife Elaine were on their honeymoon, it was the summer, the sun was shining, the beach was glorious, the sea was inviting. There was only one little problem, he didn't know how to swim. But he looked and he saw that people were hundreds of yards out and they were only knee-deep in the water, so it wasn't so deep. And how refreshing it must be. Take off your shoes and roll up your pants a little bit and walk in the water, in the cool waters, and there's no threat because it wasn't deep. And he did, and he walked out, and he was fine, hundreds of yards out at sea, and it only came up to his knees. And he writes, "I turned and I started walking back. And to my surprise and shock, I found myself suddenly engulfed by water." And he tells in a dramatic way how he felt that his life was about to end. "What a way," I thought, "to start a honeymoon." And then, of course, someone came and saved him. He said to this day he has no idea who that person was. He was unconscious at the time. Person saved him, dropped him by his wife's feet, and left. And he had no idea who to even thank, who the person was. But he says, "You know what? Every morning thereafter, Moda ani lefanecha, melech chai v'kayam, shechazarte b'nishmasi b'chamla, rabba emunasecha," became a different Moda ani. And Rabbi Sachs writes, to be a Jew is to feel the sense of gratitude, to see life as a gift, to be able to live through suffering without being defined by it, to give hope to victory over fear. To be a Jew is to offer thanks. And in another occasion, he expressed his gratitude for HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving him the opportunity to experience love, to experience beauty, and to experience faith. And he elaborated on each of those categories, love, beauty, and faith. He wrote, "I thank him for the love that has filled our home for so many years. Life is never easy. We've had our share of pain. But through it all, we discovered the love that brings new life into the world, allowing us to share in the miracle of birth and the joy of seeing our children grow. I thank him for the people I meet every day who lit up the world with simple gestures of humanity and decency." And in describing the beauty that he was able to see, he writes, "I thank him for the fragments of life he has scattered in so many lives, and the kindness of strangers, and the unexpected touch of souls across the boundaries that once divided people and made them fearful of one another. I thank him for the gift of being born a Jew, despite all the persecution visited on our people, often in the name of the same God my ancestors worshipped. I thank him for Beethoven's late quartets and Shakespeare's prose and Rembrandt's portraits." And Rabbi Sachs used to point out that Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, of what was then Palestine at least, once said that God took some of the light of the first day of creation and gave it to Rembrandt, who put it in his paintings. When he saw Rembrandt's paintings. You know, one of the things about Rembrandt's paintings that Rabbi Sachs used to highlight is that they weren't exaggerated, even the self-portraits. You know, sometimes a person makes a self-portrait, so you're a little more handsome, a little more hair, you know, a little thinner. Even in his self-portraits, nothing was exaggerated. There was just the simplicity of humanity, and that's the most beautiful thing. And faith, what is he thankful for as far as faith? "I thank him for the atheists and agnostics who keep believers from believing the unbelievable." We'll chazer that line later. "Forcing us to prove our faith by the beauty and grace we bring into the world. I thank him for all the defeats and failures that make leadership so difficult." I'm reminded of the story. Rabbi Sachs was once talking to Tony Blair. Tony Blair wrote this in his recent eulogy for Rabbi Sachs. He said that they were just both appointed to their posts at around the same time. And Tony Blair was the head of his party, of his political party, and Rabbi Sachs as the chief rabbi of British Jewry. And Tony Blair says, "I think my job is harder than yours." And Rabbi Sachs laughed. And he said, "Our people, the Jewish people, have been great at producing great leaders, but we're quite terrible at producing followers." That, you know, leading the Jewish people is never simple. And I thank him, he says, for the hardships in that, because the hard things are the only ones worth doing. And because all genuine achievement involves taking risks, making mistakes, and never giving up. I thank him for the gift of faith, which taught me to see the dazzling goodness and grace that surround us, if only we open our eyes and minds. I thank him for allowing me to thank him, for without gratitude there is no happiness, highlighting some of the teachings that we went over earlier. Without gratitude there is no happiness. I thank Hashem for giving me the ability to thank him, because without gratitude we only have the fleeting distractions of passing pleasures that grow ever less consequential with the passing years. Each word is golden. I just want to close with something that I always found amazing about Rabbi Sachs. When my wife and I first got married, we went to Israel, and my father-in-law at the time was doing a lot of work with British Telecom. So all of his frequent flyer miles were on British Airways. So he got us a trip to Israel, but we had to stop in England. That was the deal. Once we were stopping in England, we spent a weekend. We spent a Shabbos there. We spent 3-4 days in England. And we were staying in a hotel downtown, and we davened at a shul called the Marble Arch Synagogue. I remember walking into this very impressive synagogue. I sat in the back row, and the gabbai came over to me and said, "There are 1,200 seats in this shul. There will be about 50 people davening here this morning. You can sit a little closer to the front." And I remember Rabbi Sachs noticing me. Rabbi Sachs was davening in the shul that week. And he noticed me, and he came over, and he said, "Hello." And "You're here on your honeymoon?" In his drasha, he announced it. He announced, "Welcome to Aryeh and Alana Leibowitz, 21-year-old Aryeh Leibowitz and 20-year-old Alana Leibowitz. Welcome for you're spending your honeymoon here." And everyone cheered. But I remember what he spoke about. You know, this is the kind of speaker he was. He spoke about the fact that Steven Spielberg had produced a film called Schindler's List. And this is vintage Rabbi Sachs. He said that he wrote a letter to Spielberg. And he told Steven Spielberg, "You have fulfilled a great mitzvah, the mitzvah of Zachar, the mitzvah to remember what Amalek did for us. You have shown the world how Jews die. But now you have another job. You have to show the world how Jews live. You have to produce another film that tells the story that will make a child who's Jewish by birth but has no connection to their religion and make them feel good about being a Jew. It happens to be he spoke about how Spielberg wrote him back and said, I produced a film called The Prince of Egypt that tells the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, hoping that young children will now be able to say, I feel good about being a Jew. The heroes of the story are the Jewish people. The heroes of the story are the Ribbono Shelom and his beloved children, the Jewish people. And at the time, I didn't really understand it. Come on, The Prince of Egypt, I mean, it was a cartoon. It didn't really mean anything to me. But Rabbi Sacks is thinking, it was never just about our community. It was never about us. It was about the broader world community and the broader Jewish community. If there was a child who was born Jewish but has no connection to Judaism, that bothered him. And when asked what his greatest accomplishment was, it was the number of children in England the percentage of children in England who, under his tenure as chief rabbi, started attending Jewish schools. Education, education, education is all he spoke about. And if you can inspire those children, if you can look more globally, you can see a bigger picture, then you can accomplish great things. And I think through these lessons of gratitude that he taught us, he shows us a little bit of that light, of being able to see things differently than others see things. Seeing things bigger, seeing things more broadly. Zichro Baruch, we should continue to take those lessons and express that gratitude on this day of Thanksgiving and every other day for the rest of our lives. I thank you so much for coming to learn with me this morning.